On voit que les États-Unis sont l'un des plus grands pays musulmans de la planète.
We'd be one of the largest Muslim countries in the world.
Freedom means freedom for everyone. Many of you know one of my daughters is gay. People ought to be free to enter into any kind of union they wish.
If Dr. Tiller is not here to serve a woman's right to choose, who will be here to do it?
Thank you, Dr. Tiller, for allowing me to have a choice with my reproductive health.
It is not something to rejoice in when someone is killed, even if he or she is an abortionist.
Southern Illinois truck drivers who love issues, etc.
Well, the speech was highly anticipated. And, of course, carried worldwide. And it is a groundbreaking speech, if you think about it. A U.S. president, during times like these, going to a largely Muslim country, one more or less friendly to the United States, and making a speech to the entire Muslim world. Now, that's not a monolithic entity, of course. You've got a big divergence among many Muslims, West, East, and then, of course, in the Muslim world per se, we're talking about the Middle East, there are an awful lot, or the Arab Muslim world, there are an awful lot of differences there too, politically, if not religiously. How much do you think the president's speech will do to smooth over relations between the West and the so-called Muslim world? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. It's Monday afternoon, the 8th of June. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MY-IE. 877-623-6943, our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. We'll begin by talking about President Obama's Cairo speech to the Muslim world. Then we'll continue our series on the Ten Commandments. Today, the commandment, you shall not kill. Dr. Lawrence White will be our guest. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College and author of the book, The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West. Dr. Schmidt, welcome back.
Well, thank you.
Do you think that the president's speech made in Cairo last week will do what he hopes it would do, and that is begin to smooth over relations between the West and the Muslim world?
Absolutely not. In fact, I addressed that kind of a question already in the book that you just mentioned that I wrote 5 years ago, when the West, in this case Obama, apologized or tries to placate the Muslims. I mentioned there are a number of effects that will take place. First of all, they're going to see it as a sign of weakness on our part. Two, as a sign of having lost the will to stand up for our political and religious rights. And it also confirms their self-righteousness in that their part has always been correct. And in addition to that, ignores the numerous jihads that they have been engaged in ever since the time of Muhammad. And so apologizing will only strengthen and confirm the countless Muslim desires to get rid of the infidel. This is an incredible naive assumption. It has never worked with Muslims, and it will not work.
Did the president accurately describe the contributions of Islam, particularly in learning and intellectual pursuits?
No, very, very, citing some of the old stereotypes that have been taken apart by some of the best scholars in the world, and I addressed that question in my book, too. For example, George Sarton, S-A-R-T-O-N, who wrote a multi-volume work back in 1931, I believe, The Introduction to the History of Science, indicates, for example, that Muslims contributed little or nothing to science and technology. And others have said the same thing more recently. There was an article in the Mideastern Journal about 10 years or so ago indicating that Muslims who occupy at least one-fifth of the world's population only produce presently about 5% of the scientific technological output. And so when he cited all those examples of, for example, having been on the forefront of science and having invented, for example, a compass and having individuals who showed us what diseases were like and what they were healed, is simply absolutely cannot be sustained or documented from reliable history. Propaganda, yes, but not history. But it's another thing that plays well with the Muslim world, And in many cases, we in the United States, who know no better, and many others in the West, probably accept that that is true.
What about the role of women? He had a few things to say there. How accurate was the president's depiction?
Well, when he talked about women, for example, he indicated that the West sees the woman as living in a system of inequality because she has to wear a veil or a head covering, whatever you want to call it. Veil is sort of a metaphor for a woman's head covering of one kind or another. And he rejected that particular Western thought and failed to mention that while the woman, of course, in the Islamic countries may wear a distinctive garb that distinguishes her from a man, he failed to mention that the woman should be free also not to wear a veil or a head covering. That was conspicuous by its omission.
Did the president insinuate or say that, as many past presidents have, that Islam is a religion of peace?
Yes, he did. For example, he cited one of the verses out of the Quran, Surah 532, where, again, and he took it totally out of context, and he's not the first one to have done that. Some Muslim apologists have done this over the years. In fact, a few years ago, it was published in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch by on a three-quarter page ad indicating that, for example, whosoever kills someone is like he killed all mankind. Well, the context shows that this was never written to a Muslim. If you look at the, in particular, verse 33 after 32, indicates, well, that this was written for the children of Israel. It was not ever meant to apply to a Muslim. Yet that passage is often cited as an example of Muslim being a peaceful world. There are other passages that are cited that he didn't cite that are just as much out of context. And some of the passages that are often cited out of the second chapter of Surah, that Islam tolerates all religion, is a passage that has long been abrogated in Islamic theology. Abrogation means a passage that was uttered before Muhammad was in Medina, and if a passage later on contradicts what was said earlier, those passages are annulled or abrogated. And so, but he didn't cite that one. But so again, he tried to put forth the propaganda that Islam is a religion of peace. And all one has to ask, my dear friend, have you ever read the Quran? Have you ever read the history of the jihad that had been going on for centuries relative to what the Muslims did in Europe and elsewhere? And so all of that denies Islam as a religion of peace.
Now, the president did not mention that his father was at one time a practicing Muslim.
That's right.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I can only surmise, and I think if he would have done so, it would have made him guilty of being an apostate, someone who has fallen away from the Islamic religion. And that's a capital crime. So I can see why he wouldn't say that. Now, most people probably never caught the significance of that particular statement.
One of the statements that has probably had more circulation in the press is the president's mentioning the population of Muslims in the U.S. I think he had, at one point, even said that if it was strictly a population number, the U.S. might be considered, in percentages, one of the larger Muslim nations. What do you make of that claim?
Well, yeah, well, you're even being charitable. He never even said one of the largest Muslim nations. He said it was, which, of course, is fallacious. The best research that has been done, and I have published articles, one was in the Lutheran Witness a few years ago, documenting that the population of Muslims in this country is no more than 1% of our 305 million people in the United States. And sometimes you see the figure, and he cited the figure of 7 million, which is very, very incorrect. And sometimes you see even 7 to 12 million. Well, out of the roughly 1% or 3.5 million Muslims in this country, what is not noted is that about 35% of those are black Muslims who are not recognized as Muslims. So this figure of 3.5 million comes down to more like 2 million. And again, but this is the kind of propaganda that is often mentioned, but it just is not something you can document unreliable statistical survey studies that have been done, and there have been a number of them been done that have been done in the last within the last 10 years.
Folks, when you purchase Dr. Alvin Schmidt's book, The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West, using the Amazon.com link at our website, a percentage of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click on Demand, and look for The Great Divide by Dr. Alvin Schmidt. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College and author of the book, The Great Divide, The Failure of Islam and the Triumph of the West. Dr. Schmidt, thank you.
Hey, Todd, may I squeeze one thing in?
Yes, very quickly.
That particular book is now being translated in Holland in Dutch.
Ah, very good to hear. Thank you very much, Dr. Schmidt.
Yep.
When we come back from this break, we're going to spend some time with Dr. Lawrence White of Our Savior Lutheran Church in Houston, Texas. He's a regular speaker for national pro-life and pro-family organizations. We are going to tap his expertise on the commandment, you shall not kill. It's part of our ongoing conversation here on Issues, etc., on the Ten Commandments. We'll take up you shall not kill, or should it be you shall not murder? We'll take up that commandment on the other side of the break. 1-877-623-6943 is our call-in number. 1-877-623-MYIE, or you can email us right here in the studio. It's Monday afternoon. It's the 8th of June. Talkback at issuesetc.org. The commandment you shall not kill with Dr. Lawrence White. Right after this.